Jatam papam, jananam punya karmanam, te dvandva mohanir mukta, bhajante mam jadavataha, yesham tvantagatam papam, jananam punya karmanam, te dvandva mohanir mukta, bhajante mam jadavataha. Word meanings. Yesham.
Yesham.
Whose.
To.
But.
But.
Antagatam.
Antagatam.
Completely eradicated.
Completely eradicated.
Papam.
Papam.
Sin.
Sin.
Jananam.
Jananam.
Of the persons.
Of the persons.
Punya.
Punya.
Pious.
Pious.
Karamanam.
Karamanam.
Whose previous activities.
Whose previous activities.
Te.
Te.
They.
They.
Dvandva.
Dvandva.
Of duality.
Of duality.
Moha.
Moha.
Delusion.
Delusion.
Nirukta.
Nirukta.
Free from.
Bhajante,
engage in devotional service. Nam, to me.
Dridhavata,
with determination. Translation. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulative principles of religion, who have acted piously and who have conquered sinful reactions, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And gradually they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated in the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness, in the association of pure devotees. For in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.2 that if one actually wants to be liberated, he must render service to the devotees, mat-sevam dvaram ahu vimukte. But one who associates with materialistic people is on the path leading to the darkest region of the Lord, of existence. Tuna dvaram yoshitam sangasangam. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. The impersonalists do not know that forgetting their constitutional position as subordinate to the Supreme Lord is the greatest violation of God's law. Unless one is reinstated in his own constitutional position, it is not possible to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead or to be fully engaged in his transcendental loving service with determination. Yesham tvantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandamohanir mukta bhajante mam jadavataha. Om Agyanati Manandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Mutanjana Tasmai Shigarvayama. So, often Srila Prabhupada uses this verse to establish that if someone is engaged in devotional service, then it means that he's freed from all dualities, he's freed from all sinful reactions. Otherwise, he couldn't be engaged in devotional service. Says here, persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are free from the dualities of delusion, and they can engage themselves in my service with determination. So if they're engaged in Krishna's service with determination, then it means they're completely free from all sinful reactions. And it means they have acted piously. Or it means they're acting completely piously now. They may have acted piously in previous lives. Generally speaking, we think that if someone's engaged in devotional service now, he must have performed some pious activities. But even if he hasn't performed, or he wasn't a yogi, sometimes the question comes up, does it mean he was a yogi? No, maybe just agyata sukriti. Agyata sukriti means some pious activity. Sukriti, kriti means activity, and sukriti means pious, good activity. Agyata, without his knowledge. It's like our cameraman was here the other day. Without his knowledge, he was dancing. Just, he didn't know that he was doing anything particularly spiritual. He was just, you know, earning his livelihood, doing his job. But by chance, or some mercy, causeless mercy, he got the chance, the opportunity to be in the kirtan and to be dancing, to make it look. So therefore he gets benefit. And if not in this life, at some point he will be able to continue with that dancing in kirtan. And of course, because the devotees are everywhere, are traveling around, as described here, they go all over the world. Wherever they go, they make people fortunate because they give people a chance to perform agyata sukriti, or even gyata sukriti, knowledge, even perform pious activities with knowledge. But even if someone, if a devotee is in a foreign city and he asks someone, can you tell me which way to go to Dom Square? And they give him directions while they're making benefit. That's considered very good for them because they're helping the Sankirtan movement. Whether they know it or they don't know it doesn't make so much difference. They're benefited. So one who's engaged in devotional service, he's freed from all sins. He's freed from all reactions. He's not held responsible anymore. He's not a sinner. It means he's never sinned. No, he may have sinned, but now he's free from the reactions. How's that? Because Krishna says, "Aham tong sarva papebhyo moksha ishami mashita." You just surrender to me, I'll free you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. If someone actually surrenders, not just temporarily or superficially, but if he actually surrenders completely, then his karma is finished. He's no longer responsible for whatever he did. He may have been deserving to get, you know, first of all, to go to hellish planets, and after that, then to take birth as, you know, as many cows, as many births as cows, and the hair of the animal that he ate, and he did so many, and that, and all the other sins that he committed. He was supposed to suffer for that. But because he is engaging in devotional service, surrendering to Krishna, he's freed. He no longer is subjected to those punishments. And the example is Ajamil. Ajamil chanted the holy name of Narayan at the last stage of his life. Even he was thinking of his son rather than God. He was so sinful. Since the time he was a young man, he did nothing but sinful activities. He married a prostitute, rejected his own wife, stealing, killing, eating meat, everything, just for sense gratification. So, but he chanted. This proves the power of the Lord's holy name. Of all the processes of in bhakti, chanting of the holy name is especially recommended to free one from karma, cheto dharpana marjana. It cleanses the mirror of the mind, cleanses the dust. Moves all the past, is wiped clean. One will no longer have to take birth again. And provided after initiation one does not commit sinful activities, then he has no more business in this material world because his karma is already summarized. It's already closed account. So unless you open a new account, you close the other account. And you have no account. You have no account in the bank. So that means if you don't perform any material activities after taking initiation, then you have no more business in the material world. You go back to Godhead. Because you have no account. Nothing to come back for. But if you have some account, I just want to enjoy, sightseeing. I like to go to the mountains. You have an account. Mountain seeing account. Alright, so then we have to come back and take the whatever's in the account, whether it's overdrawn or whether you have some balance. Either way, you have to come back. But if a devotee has no interest, no account, finished up his business, and he's only engaged in Krishna's service with determination, dridhavataha. So dridhavataha, bhajante maam, dridhavataha. Dridhavataha, vrata means vow, and dridha means with firm determination. So that's, again, initiation. That's what it means. Firm determination, a vow. I make a vow before the Krishna, before the fire, before the spiritual master, before the Vaishnavas, before... I make the vow that I will always chant 16 rounds. I will follow the four regulative principles. This is what it means. Dridhavataha. Nothing should dissuade him. Nothing should distract him from that vow. Haridas Thakur, for example, the Namachari, was so determined that he had taken a vow to chant 300,000 names of the Lord each day that even when he was very old and practically on his deathbed, he wanted to chant all those rounds. That's a lot of rounds, 192 rounds a day. The Lord Chaitanya said, Haridas, you don't have to chant all those rounds now. You can reduce the number. You've preached sufficiently. See? So, but he said, no, I should chant. So that's how strict he was in his vows. It's like, look at Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev took a vow that he would not marry and he would not have any connection with women. In words, he took a vow of brahmacharya, of naishtika brahmacharya throughout his whole life. And this was very unique because it's quite common for brahmanas to do so, but it's very uncommon for a kshatriya to do so. For a kshatriya, not only any kshatriya, but the kshatriya, the number one, top, most powerful, and he was also the son of the emperor. So he was supposed to be the next emperor, and he had all power, everything. Good looks, strength, knowledge. But he took this vow. And he didn't take the vow and then say, oh, now I'll become a brahmana. He said, I'll remain a kshatriya. So it was an incredible. And so many things came up in the course of his life. He lived a long time. As you know, at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was far the oldest person present. There was no one even close. Even Dhritarashtra was not even in the same generation. He was two generations before. Because Dhritarashtra was the oldest son of Vachitravirya. And Vachitravirya was one of the younger brothers of Bhishmadev. So Bhishmadev was far the most senior person. And throughout his life, there were many situations where his mother, at least, and even some others, were encouraging him to break his vow for dharma, for carrying on the dynasty, for protecting the world, because when Vachitravirya died, first of all, Chitrangada had died, his first younger brother. He died because he got in a fight with a Gandharva of the same name over, you know, over nameship, which is kind of, you know. The Gandharva said, I don't like it that you have the same name as me. And they got into a fight about the name. And the Gandharva happened to be more powerful, so that was the end of Chitrangada. But then Vachitravirya, he also died. So that means there were no heirs left to the throne of Maharaj Shantanu. And so Satyavati, she said to Bhishma, now these two daughters, or these two wives of Vachitravirya, they didn't produce any children. It's your duty, Bhishmadev. You're the brother. It's allowed. Because there is an injunction that allows, in previous ages, if the husband cannot produce a child, then his brother may impregnate his wife at his request. And the son belongs to him. It's not allowed in Kali Yuga. Devarena sutopatim ashtamevam gabalambam sanyasa palapaitrakam devarena sutopatim kalo pancha vivaja. These five activities are forbidden in this age, and one of them is to impregnate one's brother's wife. But in the previous age, it was allowed. So, Satyavati was saying, this injunction is there, you're a kshatriya, these young ladies have had no children, you should give them a son to carry on the dynasty, Bhishmadev. So it was very difficult. She was adamant, crying, you know, everything. She was the mother, and he didn't want to disobey his mother's order or everything. But he said, no, you know I've taken a vow. So this is Dhritavataha. I've taken a vow. I'm not going to go back on that vow. You know, we find in the Vedic culture this principle of taking vow is, you know, is very important. Arjuna took a vow that if
if he would not protect the son of the Brahmana, then he would enter into the fire. And he was prepared to do it. It was only Krishna that stopped him. Otherwise he was going into the fire. So this Dridhavrataha, life and soul, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, one should take the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. This is Dridhavrataha. Prabhupada often said this, I have taken the order of my spiritual master and I am following blindly. So it's not actually blindly, but he's saying that to dramatize that it may be blind or it may not be blind, but I'm following. You may say it's blind, but I'm following anyway. And he may be saying it in that way, meaning, I may not know what the result will be. How do I know whether I'll be so-called successful or not successful? It doesn't matter. It's not that I'll serve the order of my spiritual master as long as it's going to turn out favorable for my, you know, social position. I'll serve the spiritual master as long as I go up in the social ladder. As long as I get a better house, better car. No, that's conditional. I'll serve the spiritual master in good times. Good time Charlie. Or they call it fair weather friend, or he rides on the bandwagon when everything's going great, everything's popular, then yes, there I am, I'm one of the team. Things go a little bad, you know, things change and people criticize, there's a little bad public relations, and I don't want to know. No, that's not very good. It's something. It's good to have some devotion, even if it's only in fair weather. But better to have devotion, fair weather, foul weather, ashli shiva padaratam pirastamam adarshanam marmaratam kurotuba itatata vavididatulam patomatpananatastu saivanapara. Lord Chaitanya says, whether you make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, or whether you handle me roughly by your embrace, still you're my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So this unconditional, mama janmani, janmani shere, I'm prepared birth after birth to serve you, Krishna. It doesn't matter whether I get liberation or not. This is Dridhavrataha. This is the real vow. I want to serve Krishna. And what does Krishna do for such a person? Then they're definitely getting liberated. Krishna is very pleased with such a determination. They become very dear to Krishna. This is not difficult to understand. Prabhupada was giving a nice, I was listening to a lecture today. He gave a very nice analogy that explains why Krishna appears to be partial to his devotees. He's not actually partial, but he gave the example of just like a man who has a company. And in the company there are so many workers, employees. He cares about all of them. He takes care of them and he's concerned about their welfare, but still not as much as his own children. So even though he may be very magnanimous, why? Because those children are exclusively dependent upon him. They have no one else to go to. They have no one else to look after them. Whereas people in the business, they have some parents or they have some others that they're depending upon. So in that sense, Krishna he's equal to all. Samoham sarva bhute. Name dveshosti na priya. Ye bhajanti tamam bhaktya maite teshu chapya. But those who engage, those who surrender to me, those who worship me, then I'm especially inclined to them. They're a friend, they're in me, and they're mine. And another example is, if a mother has 10 children, she loves all the children equally. There's no doubt. But when the little baby cries, she puts down all the other children and she runs to the baby because the baby's helpless. So, in that sense, the devotee is helpless. Why? Because he has no other shelter. He's not taking shelter of his family. He's not taking shelter of his country or the demigods or his own strength. He's not taking shelter of anything in this material world. Like that example of Draupadi. Such a beautiful example. Here she thought, well, every woman, especially a princess like Draupadi, would like to get a wonderful, powerful husband, Kshatriya. So she got a Kshatriya husband. Not one, five. She got five. And they were not just ordinary Kshatriya husbands, but they were the most powerful in the world. And so, well, she may have thought, well, I guess I'm pretty well situated now, pretty well protected. Got a good security, good program. Everyone's interested in security. But when the difficulty came, her husbands did nothing. They just sat there. I don't mean to make an offense to the Pandavas, but under the circumstances, it's not that they didn't want to do anything, but because of the circumstances and the gambling, the wager, supposedly they were not, she was no longer theirs, therefore they could not. For one reason or another, she found herself that she had no other shelter. Tridharashtra wouldn't help her. Bhishma wouldn't help her. Her husbands wouldn't help her. None of the other ladies, I don't think there were any ladies there. No one could help her. She was completely without help. The only one left was Krishna and herself. So she thought, well, I'll try to hold on to the sai with one arm to protect my honor, because the idea was that the Dushasan, the big Kshatriya, he was trying to pull off her sari to strip her naked in the assembly so everyone could appreciate her beauty, and thus she would lose all respect as a chaste woman. So she thought, well, with one arm I'll protect myself, hold on to the sari, and the other hand I'll call for Krishna. So she was calling with one hand and trying to hold on with the other hand. And then she realized, what is this? How am I, with my one little female arm, going to protect my clothing against this Maharati? This is Dushasana. He's as powerful as, you know, he can fight with 10,000 warriors at the same time. He's a completely massive, powerful man. And she thought, how can I protect? So then she put up both hands and she cried for Krishna. When she did that, and Krishna responded with unlimited sari, incarnation of the sari. So he was pulling and pulling, and the piles were getting higher, and finally he became exhausted. It's impossible. So when one surrenders fully to Krishna, then Krishna has to take care of that person fully. That's his promise. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. He told Arjuna, you may declare boldly that my devotee shall never be vanquished. And he will always be protected. So, this is the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the Sankirtan movement. This is what we're getting. Who would have thought you know, after our, you know, cursory visits to church when we were young, or temple, or whatever we went to, and we had some vague idea, maybe, of God, that maybe God's nice and maybe I should serve. But who would have thought that our lives might come to this point where we're at least, you know, contemplating the idea of total surrender, every breath, every word, every step. Who would have imagined such a thing? I never would have imagined such a thing. It was the last thing on my mind. So this is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. This is the mercy of Krishna, and this is the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that, you know, this wonderful pure devotional service, kevala bhakti, pure anyabhilashita shunyam gyanakarmajnavitam. Really, this is the unique thing of this movement. And if we don't take that, if we just take the other things, you know, just some of the other principles in a kind of a casual way, then we're not really getting the benefit of this movement fully. That's the unique thing of this movement, is that pure, unalloyed devotional service that is not available elsewhere. We have the example. Srila Prabhupada was here in Amsterdam. He was here. He was walking in this area, showing us how to surrender to Krishna. So, how fortunate we are. We're all, pretty much all contemporaries. Anyone who's at least, 20 years old, means if you're 20 or over, you're a contemporary of Srila Prabhupada. Even if we're not contemporaries, even if we're in the next, just afterwards, still, we have the opportunity to take up this path of devotional service as described here. So, are there any questions? Dr. Philip.
Maharaj, what trait in Srila Prabhupada's personality made the most impression on you?
What trait in his personality? Non-compromising. It would have been very easy to compromise. All the gurus, all the swamis compromised. That Prabhupada didn't compromise. For example, when someone showed him how to eat with knife and fork, he said, "You'll have to learn how to eat with knife and fork. You're going to America." So Prabhupada said, "I'm not going there to learn how to be like them. I'm going there to teach them how to forget all these nonsense things." Someone wanted to teach Srila Prabhupada how to wear coats and pants. He said, "No, I'm not interested in wearing that." Prabhupada was not interested. He was not compromising. He said himself, he said, "I thought that when I came to your country, and as soon as I said these four regulative of principles, then all the Americans would ask me to leave. I never thought that they would follow them," Prabhupada said. But still, he didn't compromise. And even when the Fugs came, Fugs were a popular singing group at that time. And they came and they asked about illicit sex, and Prabhupada told them exactly. He gave a whole lecture on the ill effects of it. He wasn't trying to just impress some people. He was giving the absolute truth. It was his duty to give the absolute truth, and it didn't matter. If someone took it, fine. If they didn't take it, that's also fine. He wasn't interested in followers. He was interested in carrying out the order of his spiritual master, and that's why he was successful. No compromise. And that impressed me very much. Someone else? Yeah.
About surrendering to Krishna, I have a constant question on my mind, because about when it's our body makes trouble. And everybody advise and agree, myself, that we have to take care of this body because it's a temple of Krishna. We have to take care so that we can utilize it. But same time, always this question that practically to take care means usually if you go to get some medicine, go to so-called doctor who is not a devotee, or even a dentist. And I have always a constant doubt, isn't it just if I just decide not to care? And it's always many devotees would give me, no, you have to go to doctor and take care. Always doubt about how much to depend on God, ask help from non-devotee, is that worse? Or isn't this a test that I should just not get? It's very, very difficult always, because it's, we always have this physical problem all the time. How much should I depend on? Because ultimately, never be completely healthy, it's no way.
Yeah. So, whatever is favorable for the discharge of devotional service. In other words, if my physical, if I have some physical, as you say, ailment or something, and it's disturbing my service, then let me make some attempt to try to counteract it by medicine or a doctor or whatever. If it's not too bombastic. You know, if we, as a devotee, is not very much inclined for elaborate operations and too many, if they can be avoided. For example, Prabhupada said, don't ever take me to the hospital. If anything happens, just let me die peacefully in Vrindavan. That was Prabhupada's determination. We may not be, but there are some devotees who have that determination that if it becomes that serious, then just depend on Krishna. But there's no harm if a devotee also once tries to get some medical help so that he can serve Krishna. You see, it all depends on your consciousness. If you're thinking, yes, I want to cure the body so I can, you know, have sense gratification, then that's material. But if you're thinking, let me cure the body so I can serve nicely Krishna, then that's spiritual. So either way, going to the hospital can be material or it can be spiritual. It just depends on your consciousness. If you do it with the right consciousness, then there's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with going and taking care of the body. It's like if there's something wrong with your car, then you go and you get it fixed. So this body is a vehicle. We want to keep it running for Krishna's service. But as you pointed out, it's not that we want to spend all of our time and all of our energy and everything just trying to maintain the vehicle. Because it will always have some problems, that's a fact. So, and plus, a devotee knows that Krishna is in control and Krishna does know how to cure bodies if he wants. So, and since I'm surrendered to Krishna, then why should I think that he doesn't know my necessities? He knows if my body is... So, like you say, there's both sides. A devotee doesn't want to become, you know, totally absorbed in the body all the time. At the same time, if the body can be healthy, then that's nice. But I think your mood is nice because you're also appreciating that there's no real comfortable situation in this material world. So we shouldn't be hopeful that we're going to find some really comfortable, you know, perfectly healthy situation. There's always going to be some problems and we have to tolerate and go on with our service too. Is that all right? Other questions? Yeah.
On the beginning of the purport, Srila Prabhupada was saying that unless one is free completely from sinful reactions, he cannot be considered something like that. be engaged in the devotional service, isn't it? So is that means in our case, chanting 16 rounds and following correct regulative principles means pure devotional service or just a stage to...
I don't exactly see the part that you're talking about.
Well, somewhere in the beginning, something like that.
I'm looking.
Opening actually the lecture to that.
Hmm?
You open the lecture to that. Well, you may say that.
Yeah. So, what's your question, exactly?
Well, I'm just wondering, because it is said there, you know, that unless one is free from all this. Was simple reactions to something.
But why don't you just make your question, because you're saying you're based on something that I can't seem to find. So just make your question.
Well, is it considered, let's say, that, you know, chanting 16 rounds and following four regulative principles belong to the pure devotional services?
Yes. Yes. If one sincerely performing those activities, then he's being engaged under the direction of the spiritual master in pure devotion. He may be a neophyte. He may not be necessarily the highest of the pure devotees, but it's like a mango. A mango may be ripe or unripe. So if the mango is unripe, then it's not sweet. It's not juicy. It's hard and bitter. But still, it's a mango. And give it time, and it will become sweet and soft, juicy. So as long as one is on the path following, then he's on the path of bhakti marga, he's on the pure devotional path. He himself may not be pure. Prabhupada used to say this, he said this all, he says, I am not pure. He said, I am not liberated. But because he said, I am not perfect, but because I'm following the order of my spiritual master who's perfect, therefore I'm perfect, therefore I'm pure, therefore I'm liberated. Because I'm carrying the order. Personally, I have no qualifications, but because I'm following the order, if an expert carpenter tells you, now cut here, now cut here, now glue here, now do this, then your activities are perfect because you're following his instructions. Personally, you're not a good carpenter, but if you follow, then it will be successful.
So, what then is the meaning of purification?
What is the meaning of purification? To get free from contamination?
Because we already perform pure devotional service.
Hmm?
If we already perform devotional service purely,
oh, you're saying if we're already performing. Oh, but we're in training. It's like, the apprentice carpenter. He's working under the master carpenter. It doesn't mean he's an expert yet. He's not a master. He's still under training. So, in other words, we're being trained so that we can also become masters. Master of our senses, master of... get free from all these. We may be impure, but as long as we're following the order of the spiritual master, then our activities are purified. But that doesn't mean that we're completely trained up or completely fixed up. We're in training. We're being cured of our disease. We're in good hands. We're safe. But we're not completely cured yet. Does that answer your question?
As far as I understood, pure devotional service means no material motive also.
Well, there's different definitions of pure devotional service which are used in several. So I'm using one, Prabhupada. I'm using the one where Prabhupada would say, so are there any other pure devotees in this kind of Prabhupada? They're all pure devotees. All my disciples are pure devotees. So I'm using that definition. Now there's other definitions. So, but mango, ripe mango, unripe mango, so in that sense, we may be unripe mango.
The example I understand that Bengal stands for devotional service. It is devotional service, it's a Bengal. But it is green, it means it's not pure yet. And it's right, it means it's pure.
Where did you hear that?
Well, that's how I understand it.
You mean from the example I'm giving?
No, that's how I, that's my understanding from it. So I'll ask you if that is wrong or not. What I'm trying to say is...
Oh, pure and impure.
Yeah, the mango is a devotion.
No, mango, unripe mango is not impure. There's nothing impure about it, it's just unripe. It's pure.
No, I don't see it like
it. Just wait a little bit.
Not you.
Yeah, she should go to Thai, you know.